Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Malcolm Williamson. I'm the chairman of the group. First, let me say welcome to these interim results. Ordinarily, I'd leave the presentations entirely to Andy and Tim, but I thought since I'm chairman for the first time we've produced results under my chairmanship, I'd just say a few words. The last year has seen an awful lot of change in the governance of this group, and I want to say how pleased I am that we now have a unitary board, which in my view is working extremely effectively, and we've got total clarity of leadership in the management team. The business continues to make very steady progress towards the objectives that we set, and I believe, as you see the presentations, that you, like the board, will feel confident about the direction of travel. I'd just like to say how happy I am to be chairman, and to say that I'm always available to see shareholders whenever they want to, so that's an offer that remains for the rest of time whilst I'm here. I'll hand over to Andy and Tim, and after their presentations there'll be questions. If anybody has any direct questions they want to ask of me, then please ask me at that time. Andy, over to you.
Thank you, Malcolm. Good morning, and welcome to our 2013 half-year results. I'll start with the key messages. These results demonstrate that we're delivering strongly on our consistent strategy. So the group's attractive strategic outlook, where we have scale businesses with competitive advantage, is delivering two things: excellent progress on cash generation and good profitable growth. So what are the headline results which evidence these two areas? We focus first and foremost on cash generation today. I'm pleased with the progress that we've made. Sustainable free surplus is up 23% to £147 million. But I'm particularly pleased with two things. Firstly, our expected in-force return is stable year on year, showing the benefit of last year's improved new business profitability. Secondly, I'm delighted that when this is coupled with the significant reduction in investment in new business, we have much higher quality earnings, with sustainable free surplus before operating variances now at £176 million. This is strong progress, given that our goal over the medium term is for operating variances to be at least net neutral. Moving on to growing cash tomorrow and getting to our £400 million per annum target, obviously in-force cash would reduce slowly over time. There are three key levers to offset this, and we are confident that we can pull these levers and hence replenish this runoff, as is demonstrated by our results. So the first lever, new business profits from our core new business franchises, which, even with the reduction in investment in new business, are up 29% in the first half, led by the UK division, up 41%. Spending less and getting more for it. Secondly, exiting non-core international areas, where I'm pleased with progress, and hence we've upstreamed our planned £10 million interim dividends. And thirdly, heritage and investment management initiatives, where our annuity back book restructure is expected to deliver £10 million additional free surplus per annum. And Friends Life Investments received a further £7 billion of assets. This takes assets to £18 billion just 1 year from launch, which is expected to deliver £6 million per annum of additional free surplus. Tim will cover the numbers in more detail shortly. I want to focus on how the execution of our strategy is driving these results. This is a slide I use with the year-end results, updated for the across-the-board increases in assets under management in the first half. Our strategic outlook is attractive because our strategy is to play in markets that meet three key criteria. Firstly, attractive growth markets driven by the key market trends. Secondly, where we have scale and competitive advantage. And hence, thirdly, where we can deliver cash and returns for shareholders. We covered our international strategy in depth last November, and so today I want to focus on our UK retirement businesses, as I believe these benefit from the strongest growth drivers and hence are the main focus of our strategic investment. I'm often asked where the business is going in the longer term. Our focus is very much on completing the turnaround and hitting our 2013 targets. But this slide will give some insight to a key part of our longer term future, as our strategy targets the rapidly growing retirement market in the UK. If we look at this from a customer point of view, the UK has an ageing population with reducing state support and a significant drive from defined benefit to defined contribution pensions, further fuelled by automatic enrolment. Customers need to think about accumulation through to decumulation. In terms of accumulation, heritage has a key role to play. There are £350 billion of assets in closed or semi-closed books in the UK, the majority of which is pensions. We have the expertise and capability to manage these books. We have scale with 20% of this market. And not right now, but in the longer term, there is a case for further consolidation due to the expertise needed in running these books. Corporate benefits is the accumulation vehicle of today. Again, there's huge growth, with the current £400 billion of assets under management expected to grow to £1.2 trillion by the end of this decade. We're the number two player in this market. And all of this feeds the retirement income market. Again, significant growth here, with the £14 billion of premiums last year expected to triple by the end of this decade. Our edge here is that we have 11% of the maturing pensions in the UK market, and given our historical retention rate, we have significant upside here, both from the market growth and growing our share. This whole accumulation and decumulation is fine for customers if all goes well, but it doesn't always, and we won't meet our customers' retirement needs without offering protection for them and their families should they die or fall ill. While there isn't the same short-term growth here, there are huge unmet needs, and if we can meet these needs and make a substantial new business profit, then that's clearly good all round. And all of this is underpinned by our growing capability in investment management and strategic asset allocation, all of which drive significant revenue synergies between these areas. I'll therefore focus on each of these areas in turn, in particular seek to demonstrate why I believe we'll be the winners in these markets. And I'll start with heritage. As I've said, it's an attractive market outlook. We have good scale, and in particular, we've built a distinctive capability to turn embedded value into cash. Up until now, our focus has been on capital optimisation, which has accelerated nearly £300 million of cash over the last couple of years. This year's programme completes the simplification, moving to just two UK life companies, one for heritage and one for the UK open businesses. We took the low-hanging fruit before, and this year's programme is primarily about streamlining and operational simplification, and is expected to complete by the end of this year. Going forward, our focus is on growing incremental annual cash generation from the Heritage division, hence growing embedded value in the middle of the slide here. And today, we're announcing the first step of that, where we've agreed, subject to regulatory approval, to transfer £2 billion of annuities from the with-profit fund to the shareholder fund. Final impacts will depend on markets, but we broadly expect a one-off adverse sustainable free surplus impact of £20 million in the second half of this year and about £10 million per annum of extra in-force cash generation from 2014 onwards. When we look forward from here, there are further heritage initiatives we're planning over the next couple of years, to unify the with-profit management framework and consider further tranches from the remaining £2.5 billion of annuities in the with-profit funds. It's important to note that these deals are complex, involving negotiations with the with-profit committee and independent experts, but it's a key area of focus and potential value. Bringing all this together for Heritage, the benefits of the initiatives that we've already done, such as the cost reductions and the Diligenta outsource, are key drivers of the fact that the in-force cash generation runs off slowly over the next few years. This new stream of activity, focused on generating incremental annual cash from the Heritage book, is in addition to that previously disclosed in-force runoff. So this £10 million per annum, together with the investment management initiatives I'll talk about in a moment, and coupled with potential future initiatives, are all important drivers in sustaining and improving cash generation towards our £400 million target. On corporate benefits, we've seen before the strong market growth and our scale position within this market. But rigorous financial discipline is critical here, as it's a thin margin business. This is an asset business, So while we quote insurance metrics, we actually manage it as a cash business. That means we need to grow assets at decent margins and cut costs. To be able to grow assets at decent margins, we need competitive advantage, which we have through strong client and distributor relationships and strong propositions. I could talk at length about our competitive edge, but it's easier to evidence it with hard results. So our strong client relationships mean that we've staged 40 schemes in the first half, with 150 more expected in the second half. And our strong EBC relationships and proposition means that our pipeline of new schemes continues to accelerate and is at 3 times the level it was a year ago. Hence, we've significantly grown corporate benefit assets under management. But stepping back on corporate benefits, while this leaves us well placed for the second half, it's worth noting that our first half sales are down year on year. I've been clear all along that I will not invest capital or resources in unprofitable new business. We avoided the new schemes written in the first half of this year because, based on my 25 years of experience in this market, we believed that these very large trophy schemes that were the first to auto-enrol would be unprofitable. I'm quite happy to stand here with corporate benefits results showing sales down 13% and new business profits up 30%. I'm very confident that if there's profitable new business to be written, we have the competitive edge to win strongly, but we won't do it if it won't be profitable. Given we run this as a cash business, it's important to share with you our cash profile in the bottom right of the slide here. Now, to be clear, our rigorous financial discipline means that we fully load our costs down to individual business units, keeping only a very small proportion of our costs, overhead costs, centrally at resolution level, as we believe it's imperative that business units take control of the costs of the group. And you can see here that we're delivering a strong but necessary improvement in cash generation, with this business now cash positive and hence adding value. In particular, it has a potential to make a good contribution to our goal of growing cash generation for the group going forwards. On retirement income, once again here, there's an attractive market outlook and we have a good strategic position. The purpose of the left-hand side of the slide here is to show the key levers of value. So underlying vestings times retention rate times margin equals value of new business. We know and understand this market and hence know how to pull the levers of value. Firstly, we've redirected customers from the with-profit funds to the retirement income business. Secondly, our retention rate has improved to 32% from 25% previously, primarily driven by improved customer engagement through our dedicated team and improved propositions through our new enhanced lifestyle annuity. As we roll out our pilots here, we're still getting retention rates over 50%. And thirdly, we've significantly improved our customer pricing, but covered this off by improving our investment strategy and hence yield. This all delivers excellent growth in value of new business. It's also worth adding that we retain a conservative approach to default provisions and hence upfront profit recognition. In terms of future opportunities from here, we're announcing today that we will launch into the open market for annuities in the fourth quarter. Initially, this will be small scale, limited to lifestyle annuities. We're further improving customer pricing, albeit we'll cover some of this impact through further improvements in investment yields, which I'll come onto in a moment. And finally, we've recently signed a partnership deal with Key Retirement Solutions. So for those of our customers who want to broker in the open market, we can offer this and still take a revenue margin. Pulling all this together for retirement income going forward, there are undoubtedly market drivers to improve customer pricing and increase the relative size of the open market compared to internal vestings. Therefore, as I've said before, I do expect our margins to be lower over time. However, I still believe margins in this market will remain attractive. The reason I believe this is the rate of growth in demand is huge, with the market size tripling by the end of this decade. And there are significant barriers to entry, which means I think it's unlikely that supply will grow in line with demand. Hence, I believe attractive margins will continue to be earned throughout this market. I'll briefly touch on protection. While there aren't the same short-term growth drivers, margins are attractive and there are significant unmet needs. In summary, we are executing well on our strategy, and hence we've delivered further growth in value of new business for significantly less investment in new business. Once again, spend less and get more for it. We've maintained our financial discipline in what have been challenging market conditions in the first half, with the individual protection market down 10% in the first quarter. While this puts some risk into the delivery of our 2013 targets here, financial discipline comes first and foremost, and in these market conditions, 14% growth in new business profits is pleasing. This performance has been driven by the strength of our propositions and the fact that we now have 100% of new business on our target platforms and our distribution partnerships. I'm also very pleased to announce today that we've secured a major new distribution partnership with Virgin Money, which will launch early next year. Having covered the UK business units, I now want to touch on how heritage, corporate benefits and retirement income are all underpinned by our growing investment management and strategic asset allocation capability. I'll take each in turn. The Heritage division has £71 billion of assets, the vast majority of which are discretionary assets, historically under agreement with F&C and AXA IM, under which we were paying an average of 14 basis points per annum. What we need here is the right proposition for our customers and good value for shareholders. Our initial focus has been moving assets to Friends Life Investments, which I'll touch on in a moment. Going forward, there's the potential to consider more of the assets here, although in many cases, break fees will apply. On corporate benefits, there's a potential additional revenue stream through our three new blended auto-enrollment default fund solutions, which can offer better customer outcomes and higher revenue to our business. On retirement income, I've already talked about the benefits of improved investment yields. Further improvements will come from infrastructure loans, such as the £75 million Draps Group investment we concluded in Q2, and also the £500 million commercial real estate loan mandate that we've just launched. This additional yield will offset some of the impact of the further pricing improvements that I referred to earlier. And all of this is underpinned by our fixed interest in-house asset manager, Friends Life Investments. I announced our intention to create a new asset manager in November 2011. We launched a year ago and already have £18 billion of assets under management. In other words, setting up FLI and restructuring about 20% of the heritage assets has saved the group £6 million per annum, some of which we recognised in 2012. You can add this £6 million per annum to the £10 million per annum from the annuity backbook restructure and see how the focus of our dedicated heritage management team is having a significant impact on our annual cash generation and hence also on our embedded value. And finally, international. As you know, we're executing on the international strategy that we announced last November, and I'm pleased with the progress. We said the early priorities were improving cash generation and exiting non-core markets. Sustainable free surplus is up more than fourfold. And the non-core exits are on track to complete fully by the end of this quarter. This gives us a much more solid foundation to improve the embedded value profits, which are down year on year, by removing the drag of non-core and then focusing on growing core new business profits. In terms of the core businesses, FPI and Lombard, these are both asset businesses. In both, we've delivered further growth in assets under management, together with further cost reductions, both driving better cash generation. Once again, we've maintained our rigorous financial discipline. For example, we've resisted the commission war in a challenging unit-linked market in Hong Kong. Across both our international businesses, the execution of our strategy has given us confidence to pay our expected interim dividends of £6 million and £4 million respectively. And in FPI's case, this is the first ever dividend. So to summarise, the key messages to take away. Our strategic outlook is attractive. We're focused on growth markets where we have scale and competitive advantage and are well placed for the key market trends. And this consistent strategy is delivering, as evidenced by our strong execution in the first half, including the Heritage with-profit annuity deal and asset transfer to FLI, strong progress in auto-enrolling our existing corporate clients, and our retention rate on annuities increasing from 25% to 32%. This in turn leads to ever stronger financial results, with cash generation taking a further significant step forward, with more to come from the heritage initiatives. Add to this the 40% growth in UK value of new business, and overall, I'm pleased with the strong progress we've made in the first half. And with that, I'll hand over to Tim, who will cover the financials in more detail. Tim.
Okay, thank you very much, Andy, and good morning, everybody. If I can get this to work, good. Well, as Andy's already explained, our results for the first half year of 2013 have been good across all reporting metrics. We've achieved strong, sustainable free surplus and IFRS-based operating profit growth in the first half of the year, largely due to the disciplined approach taken to writing new business. Compared to these performances, our MCV operating result appears less positive. However, this largely reflects the predicted reduction in expected returns applied to the opening embedded value. Our capital position remains strong and the balance sheet remains low risk. Accordingly, and in line with our stated dividend policy, we'll be maintaining our interim dividend at 7.05 pence per share. We're obviously focused on the delivery of a number of key financial targets due at the end of this year. We remain on track to achieve the vast majority of these, especially given the very strong second quarter performance in corporate benefits, with the only area that I'm watching closely being protection, following the individual protection market reductions in the first quarter. Well, let's get into the numbers. The sustainable free surplus and IFRS performance, up to £147 million and £191 million respectively, are strong improvements. This is particularly pleasing as it shows that our strategy is working, with our focus on value over volume and the control of acquisition costs being instrumental in delivering these improvements. The MCV operating result of £214 million has been impacted by the low interest rate environment in line with what we flagged at the year-end results, although to some degree this has been mitigated by other positive factors. We've continued to deliver on our cost savings targets, with the delivery of operational savings and the conversion of contractualised savings driving the run rate delivered up to £119 million. Including those savings that we've already secured, we've now achieved 96% of our overall target. Our strong capital position, with an estimated IGCA surplus of £2.1 billion, underpins our dividend policy. I'd now like to move on to the operating results in more detail. Well, back in March, I explained how we focus on each and every element of sustainable free surplus generation, and I'm using the same approach this time as well. This year's sustainable free surplus, as you've heard, is up 23% on last year. The result includes a modest outperformance on expected return, which I will explain in a moment, but is principally driven by a 30% improvement in investment in new business, primarily through cost reductions and despite higher profit generation. At a divisional level, the UK and Heritage result is up 11%. Well, being the largest component of the group, it's only natural that the drivers of the group result are a reflection of the good progress made in the divisions. And this result demonstrates our value over volume focus and good cost control, with investment in new business in this division falling by £40 million on last year. The contribution from the international division at £18 million has also improved period on period and reflects a number of factors. These include the group's activities to exit non-core markets, which have successfully reduced investment in new business, as well as the absence of one-off costs incurred in 2012. And I'll come back to the non-core results later. So let's look in a bit more detail at the largest component of SFS, expected return. As you can see from the left-hand side of the slide, total expected return is very much in line with last year, which is a good position to be in. The UK and Heritage returns are up on last year, reflecting a modest increase in with-profit maturities. And as a result, the numbers are slightly ahead of the illustrative returns that I gave in March, if annualised. The chart that I showed at year-end showed the emergence of the surplus from the end 2012 in-force book was expected to decline slowly over the next few years. That, of course, is still our expectation from that enforced book. But in a moment, I'll talk you through some of the actions that we've taken to increase the security of cash generation. At this group level, economic factors have had a broadly neutral impact on surplus generation, with the impact of lower expected rates of return offset by the higher opening equity markets. Actually, the effect of lower expected returns is most visible in the shareholder asset returns, which, due to the largely cash and gilt asset weighting, are £11 million lower than last year. Within international, I said back in March that we expected to see a drop in the in-force returns within FPI due to lower sales volumes. In fact, in the first half, this reduction has been broadly offset by higher returns in Lombard due to higher opening funds under management. However, I still expect to see a slowing in overall expected return for international in the second half. Back in March, we published a slide which showed that we expected a £25 million lower in-force return in 2014 compared to 2013, based upon the economics and in-force book as at December 12. There's enough dates in there for anyone. I should publish a calendar, I think. But as we've said, we're very focused on taking decisive actions to replenish the in-force runoff and to deliver sustainable returns. Key, of course, is improving new business profitability. And the 41% increase in new business profits in the UK division this half is solid demonstration of the efficiencies that we're achieving. We'll review this in detail in a moment, but we're taking other actions as well. For example, the annuity backbook deal that Andy referred to earlier is expected to increase surplus generation by around £10 million each year from 2014. In addition, asset recaptures within Friends Life Investments will also deliver sustainable benefits. Around £1 million is already within this year's expected return, and a further £5 million is expected based upon this year's asset recaptures. The delivery of these and other initiatives further increases our confidence of being able to offset the runoff in future years. And all of this provides the security of cash generation in the longer term. As I said, one of the key drivers of cash management is investing wisely in new business. And I'm very pleased with the continuing progress that we've made so far in 2013 on this front, with investment in new business reducing, i.e. improving, by 41% in the UK and Heritage divisions, and by 30% across the group to £110 million. This is driven by realised cost savings and includes, of course, the capital that we put aside to support new business written in the period. Although not a formal target, we have said before that we expect to be able to deliver a reduction in the investment in new business to between £200 and £250 million per annum. This half-year result, if annualised, achieves that for the first time, and does so whilst we're also materially increasing new business profitability. Looking to the right-hand side, you can see that whilst we have seen volume reductions across most areas, these are principally in the areas that you would expect, namely in our non-core international businesses and the Heritage division, where we do not actively market products. In these areas, we've seen sales volumes reduced by 70% and 55% respectively, reflecting the strategic activities in international and the absence of DWP business in Heritage. In contrast, value of new business has been maintained at £97 million and overall IRR improved to 11.2%. The improvements also mean that new business within our core new business franchises is being written at a very pleasing 15.4%. And I'll step through the divisions in a bit more detail now. In our UK division, we've continued the strong progress made in 2012, with VNB up 41%. This represents excellent progress and reflects the improved level of efficiency with which we're writing new business. As referred to previously, this value has also been increased whilst writing lower volumes of business, and this is reflected in the improvement in our new business margins. Overall, UK new business is being achieved at a 16.7% IRR, and at a 4.9% margin, which compares very strongly against our competitors. All of this is further validation of our UK strategy. In the business units, retirement income has had another strong period with a profit contribution of £44 million, up 76%, and achieved with strong IRRs. Corporate benefits had a stronger than expected performance overall. Whilst profits in the first quarter of 2013 were down a bit on 2012, they are now up 30% on the first half of last year. Protection profits are up 14%, despite the difficult market conditions that Andy mentioned. And we've also achieved a substantial increase in the protection IRR to 15% through all the good efforts that we have discussed previously. So what about full-year targets? Well, starting with retirement income, we've talked about the growing strength of this business previously, with the targets already successfully delivered in 2012. The priority going forwards is to take this to the next stage with the delivery of our open market offering in the fourth quarter of this year. Our corporate benefits business is a significant player in the pensions market, and we have been very selective in recent periods to make sure that we maintain pricing discipline. This business has performed well so far in 2013 and had a very strong close to the second quarter. We remain confident of delivering our corporate benefits targets in the second half of 2013, with a good pipeline of new and auto-enrolling schemes expected to complete over this period. Our protection business has very strong propositions within the group and individual protection marketplaces. Overall protection sales in the second quarter were 17% higher than in Q1. As a result, we still expect to be right in the ballpark range of achieving the challenging targets for the year as a whole, hence my amber rating here. But given how this area has improved since being loss-making 2 years ago, it's easy to see why I am pleased with the performance of this business. Moving now on to our international business and specifically the core elements of this division. Well, Lombard has delivered a contribution from new business of £12 million, consistent with that delivered in 2012. The economic and regulatory environments remain challenging for this business, with varied performances across its European regions. Despite this, the benefit of having a wide geographic footprint has meant the first half performance has been stable. In our FPI core business, profits have been resilient, with VNB of £9 million marginally down on the first half of 2012. Volumes have not changed hugely, with the mix of business towards single premium business resulting in a slight reduction in overall margins. Despite this, we are endeavouring to actively manage our new business mix and thereby balance the priorities of growing returns and our competitive strengths. Good progress has been made to date, improving core international IRR to 12.5%, and the focus in both of these business units on delivering target level returns will continue throughout the second half of 2013. In this regard, we are all used to the Lombard business being very seasonal, with the vast majority of value geared to the final quarter of the year. And this seasonality will, of course, dominate the seasonal trend of results and IRR for the division as a whole. Moving on to the non-core part of international. In terms of exiting unprofitable markets, I'm delighted with the swift and positive actions that have been taken to step back from these areas. As demonstrated by the chart on the left, we have cut non-core volumes by 70% by fully exiting all areas other than Germany, where we are deliberately managing our exit over time as we bring on board the new third-party source product suite from Cardea. In fact, the £9 million of APE written in the first half of 2013 principally relates to business written in Germany. New business, bar increments probably, will have stopped by the end of the third quarter. As I predicted in March, this ongoing bit of new business has resulted in a modest level of operating drag and a loss from new business of £5 million. In free surplus terms, this drag comes through as a cost of investing in new business and totals £16 million in the first months of the year, 6 months of the year. We expect a similar run rate in operating drag until the end of the third quarter, when new sales in Germany will cease. And now I'd like to move on to expenses. A significant driver of our improved performance to date has been the delivery of cost savings. We've continued to reduce our operating expense base with a 9% reduction at a group level, including a 19% cut in international and an 8% cut in the UK and heritage divisions. The cut in international costs includes the non-recurrence of £7 million of restructuring costs included in the first half of 2012. On a run rate basis, we've delivered £119 million of cost savings in the UK and Heritage divisions, with a further £35 million contractualised. Progress in the first half includes the completion in June of the migration of our systems hosting environment away from AXA. This was a huge project, but one completed within the cost guidance given last November in our Q3 market update. All in all, this is excellent progress. That means that we are drawing close to completing this activity, with 96% of our 2015 £160 million savings target now secured. Although not shown on this slide, you may well have noticed from today's RNS that our non-recurring or below-the-line costs are also down period on period. In fact, the £57 million expensed in this 6 months implies a run rate less than half that incurred last year. So costs are down everywhere. Moving on now to IFRS, where we apply the same broad approach to sources and uses as we do for sustainable free surplus. Well, our first half result is up 17% on the same period of 2012. Consistent with our sustainable free surplus result, the reduction in new business strain is a key contributor, with a 34% reduction to £55 million. Economics have played a mixed role in the results, with both positive and negative impacts across the divisions. And I'll come back to these in a moment. At the divisional level, the UK and Heritage divisions have delivered a good result at £129 million, a strong improvement on 2012 on an underlying basis. Other than a strong reduction in new business strain, the result also reflects growth in surplus generation, offset by lower returns on shareholder assets, as we have seen in other metrics. On the international side, the visibly strong improvement to £74 million reflects a number of factors, including higher charges, together with the non-recurrence of one-off costs that I mentioned earlier. And the 2013 result also benefits from a reduction in non-core guarantee provisions. I now want to look at the different drivers behind the IFRS result. Well, at a headline level, the result is up 17%, as I said. However, the progression after the removal of one-off positive reserving changes in 2012 is even stronger. Looking at the blue bricks, the largest single driver of increased profits has been the successful management of new business strain, which I covered in detail earlier. As you can see here, the next couple of bricks with blowout boxes group the other main drivers into two categories: increased income and economic returns. Taking the increased income elements first, there are a number of items where progression is greater than we would normally expect, including a greater contribution from with-profit bonuses. Remember, we saw that when discussing SFS earlier. There's also a higher element of income from our international business, £10 million of which relates to premium margin received on non-core products. Although being non-core, we expect this type of benefit to decline, of course, over the coming years. In terms of economic returns, we have received higher annual management charges due to improved equity markets, together with a benefit from a reduction in guarantee reserves in the non-core business. Partly offsetting these benefits are lower returns on shareholder assets. Turning now to MCV briefly. Well, the MCV result of £214 million is down on the first 6 months of 2012. As referred to earlier and highlighted in our 2012 full-year results, the single largest driver of 2013 half-year results has been the significantly lower long-term rates underpinning our expected returns. Offsetting these impacts has been the benefit of the cost savings achieved by building the FLI business that Andy discussed, and that benefit was a £34 million uplift to embedded value at the half-year. At a divisional level, UK and Heritage operating profits of £241 million are marginally down on 2012. Economic impacts are the main driver of this result and unfortunately outweigh the strong value of new business performance in this division. The international division's MCV operating result of £21 million highlights both the disparity created by the strategic review as well as some negative persistency in Lombard, reflecting difficult markets, particularly including Belgium. ROEV remains low at 6.1%, and as I've said before, this continues to reflect the low expected returns achievable in the current economic environment. However, we continue to focus on this measure of our performance and remain committed to achieving our targeted ROEV of 10% in the medium term. We know that the biggest driver of the drop in expected returns from in-force business is lower expected rates, which were applicable at the beginning of the year. These are in line with disclosures in our year-end 2012 results and are highlighted here by the halving of the cash and gilt rate of return from 1.35% to 0.67%. To demonstrate this more clearly, I've shown here on the right-hand side a breakdown of the key contributors to MCV expected return. Whilst in reality there are of course complexities to this calculation, which is simplified bottom right on the slide, the application of the change in rate should give you the high level approximation of the overall change. Moving on to capital. Well, the group has maintained a strong capital position with an estimated IGCA surplus of £2.1 billion, giving a coverage of over 220%. This level of surplus is in line with that reported at year-end 2012 after allowing for the payment of the 2012 final dividend. Capital sensitivities also remain consistent and demonstrate the relative insensitivity of our IGCA position to market movements. The economic capital surplus position was estimated to be £3.7 billion at the end of the first half, up on that reported at the 2012 year-end, reflecting market movements. Available shareholder cash of £839 million is not significantly different from the year-end position and reflects timing of upstream dividends versus external dividend payments. As Andy's already stated, the international division has paid up £10 million of dividends, with these flowing through the group to the holding companies. So let's look briefly at how cash is upstreamed in the group. Well, whilst we have a number of divisions and, of course, many more statutory entities, the structure of the group is designed to minimise potential blocks to the upstreaming of cash. Sustainable free surplus generation also comfortably covers the dividend payments as they flow up through to the group's holding companies. Improved new business profitability in the UK division will contribute to the upstreaming of cash surpluses in time, but it immediately contributes to the increased value of that division to its parent and to the group as a whole. I've shown here our usual reporting scorecard. This shows the continued strong progress towards our 2013 targets and, as I discussed earlier, also reflects our view that we will be right in the ballpark of achieving our protection targets. Notwithstanding this, we are still confident of achieving the aggregate UK division £155 million VNB target, hence the green overall for that UK level target. These targets were set some time ago, when the journey to transform the acquired businesses was started. And to be able to report a scorecard with nearly all 2013 targets as green is a strong statement of consistent execution against our strategy. And so in summary, I want to wrap up with a familiar slide. Our strategy is unchanged, and these results show that it is delivering. We've delivered a good set of results across all measures. Sustainable free surplus, a key driver of our cash generation, has grown 23% in the period, underpinned by a stable in-force generation, and our IFRS results are similarly positive. We've continued to grow our new business profitability and, importantly, are improving the efficiency with which we're writing new business. We're spending less and we're delivering greater value, generating more cash for tomorrow from a more efficient use of cash today. And with that, I'll hand you back to Andy, and we'll be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Tim. We'll move to questions now. It might actually, if you don't mind switching the projector off, that'll be great, so I'm not in the glare at the front here. I've got a number of the team with us, in particular, as well as Sir Malcolm. I've got Jonathan Moss, the CEO of our Heritage Division, and John van der Wielen, the CEO of our UK and international businesses. For most of you know John, he's an Australian, so can I just please ask that you keep your questions to the matters of resolution and don't mention Lions rugby or Ashes cricket, if that's okay, because it's a bit of a sore topic. So, Blair, shall we kick off with you? Maybe if you could just say your name and where you're from as you ask your questions as well, please.
Thanks very much. It's Blair Stewart from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. With only one Scotsman in the test team, I'm not going to talk about Lions too much.
He only made it on for 20 minutes as well at the end.
Thanks
Sorry,
for that.
Blair, go on.
Right. With 176 million of cash, excluding variances, plus the other initiatives you talked about with the annuities, the asset management, Germany costs falling away, it looks like you're actually very close to a run rate of achieving your 400 million. Just want some comments around that, and you know, at what stage would you expect to be there and moving to a progressive dividend? And then secondly, be very interested to hear perhaps from Jonathan about some of the projects to focus on that you're focusing on the heritage book now in order to improve cash generation there. It'd be very useful. Thank you.
So Tim, do you want to pick up the first of those, and then Jonathan the second?
Thank you very much for the question, Blair. Look, I've always been completely confident that the dividend is sustainable, and I love the fact that the implication of your question is that the existing dividend and its sustainability is now taken as read. So thank you for the implied statement underlying your question. In terms of progression, we're delighted with the increase in the quality of the sustainable free surplus generation at the half year, and the 176 number is a strong improvement on where it was before. Key to continuing the trend is that we undertake the initiatives necessary to replenish the runoff that we know is going to happen from the in-force book. And we've highlighted today not just improving new business profitability in the UK, but also specific initiatives that we've taken which will give us sustainable surplus generation into the future. I can't commit to a timeline of when we're going to get to the 400, but you know, we stood here this time last year, and although we outlined at that stage that the economic environment was making it £50 million more difficult to get to 400, we were absolutely not dropping the 400 target. And today you've got visible evidence of the kind of actions that we're taking to help us get to that target. But I can't give you a timetable upon where we are going to get there. But clearly today, you know, huge steps forward in that regard.
Thanks, Tim. Jonathan, you want the comments on the initiatives?
Thanks, Blair. Okay, so I guess one of my sort of ambitions with the heritage business is that sort of sense of, over time, standardising, simplifying, making it all sort of work well and in a predictable way. And in particular with the with-profits funds, clearly, over time, they will run off. As things stand, they've got a whole bunch of not just with-profits liabilities in them, but non-profit liabilities, in particular annuities, that were written over the course of the last 10, 15, 20 years. They'll tend to run a lot longer than the with-profits business. Our view is that there's a win-win there, where if we can crystallise the embedded value for the benefit of the with-profits policyholders, that gives them some estate that we can begin to pay out now. Conversely, it gives the shareholder an opportunity to effectively do a, if you like, a bulk purchase annuity deal from which we can generate VIF for ourselves. Potentially, we can do that by taking more investment risk than we would have taken within the with-profits funds, given that they're in runoff. We're also able to do that because, as Tim indicated earlier, we've got much more Pillar 2 headroom than we've got than we've got Pillar 1. So there is the opportunity to take that business out. And clearly, as Andy indicated, it's complicated. You have to reach a price that's acceptable to both the parties, and we have to go through a very strong governance process to get there. It's a function of the market conditions at the time. What can we do to reinvest the assets more effectively? What yield can we get on that? What spread can we get on that? As I say, that's a function of market conditions. So it's very much our ambition to do it. We've made a start with the £2 billion of annuity assets that have already been mentioned. There are further blocks of annuities that we will look to do through 2014-2015. This is probably the biggest of the ones that we will look at.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thank you. And I'll maybe just touch on the investment management side as well. So, you know, we set up Friends Life Investments, 18 billion of assets under management in 1 year from a standing start, and that's only restructuring 20% of the heritage assets. So we'll be looking at the other 80% there, and looking at how we can deliver strongly with a strong proposition for our customers, but also doing that more cost effectively for shareholders. So to your original question, Blair, the 10 million per annum for the with profit annuity restructure, and the fact there's more to go out there, but it's challenging and complicated to do. 6 million per annum from restructuring 20% of the heritage assets. They're all important levers in driving stronger cash generation and growing cash into the future. Next, Ashik.
Yeah, thanks and good morning, everyone. Three questions. Can you just remind us of your M&A strategy, inorganic opportunities? Are you looking to it or are you still close to it? How should we think about it going forward? Secondly, it looks like you're more bullish on annuities now, given that you're opening open market option, taking more from with-profit to shareholder-backed annuities. So can you just remind us your risk appetite there, i.e. your current shareholder annuities is around $8 billion, if I'm not wrong. Where do you see that to be going on? And third one, your in-force release from free surplus generation hasn't moved a lot, even though you have delivered so much of cost savings over year on year. So what's driving that? Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ashik. So I'll take the first two and give Tim the final one. In terms of M&A, we've been very clear that we are not seeking acquisitions at this stage in time, and that remains absolutely the case. We are not seeking acquisitions at this stage in time. If I take a medium-term perspective, and you know, Jonathan talked about a number of the initiatives we're seeking to do in heritage and on the asset management side, but if I take a medium-term perspective, I think we have demonstrated that we've got the expertise and capability to create value for shareholders in consolidating back books together. And I think there is the potential for further value from that in the medium term, but not something we're seeking in the shorter term. On the annuity side, my view is the annuity market is the largest and the fastest growing profit pool in the UK. Personally, I've worked in the annuity market for 25 years, and we've hired a strong team of people within the business that have that same length and depth of experience. And I think what's particularly attractive, as well as it being a very attractive market, very strong growth drivers. We're currently under-penetrated both in our in-force book. We've got a real edge with 11% of the maturing pensions. But if you then look at it in the context of the group as a whole, as you rightly say, we only have about $8 billion of existing annuities on the balance sheet, which is substantially lower than the majority of our UK competitors. What that means is that taking annuity risks onto the balance sheet diversify very well indeed on an economic capital basis. So for all those reasons, we think it's a very attractive sort of strong future growth for the organisation. Tim, do you want to?
Yeah, actually, as for the last part of your question, of course, the benefit from the expense reductions that, as they related to maintenance contracts, was capitalised and taken within the 2011 results. And from memory, I might get that wrong, it's about 180 million. So it is therefore about 4% of the expected return benefit is because there's a 4% benefit within the balance sheet embedded value coming from those cost reductions. So it is in there, but it's a relatively modest component.
Thank you. Gordon. Do you want to just stick this one? There you go.
Gordon Aitken from RBC. Just staying with the questions on annuities. So you said you'd enter the external market in Q4. So that's going to bring you quite a lot of increased volume. And just wonder if you could give us an idea of quantum there, because there seems to be a real lack of supply in the market with really only Aviva and Legal & General competing. And secondly on that, will you offer your internal vesting customers a preferential rate because of lack of anti-selection? And finally on the annuities, I mean, should we expect margins to drop to sort of Legal & General style margins, or would you expect them to be somewhere between where you currently are and where they are?
Sure. Okay. So taking each of those in turn, our approach in terms of entering the open market for annuities, with the whole approach we've taken to annuities has been a pretty disciplined, well thought out, careful approach, being really confident that we don't run risk of anti-selection, that we get all the systems and processes in place, we get the investment strategy lined up behind it, and we'll continue to do that as we enter into the open market for annuities. So I want to be quite clear that we expect it to be fairly low scale initially and to build that up over time as we enter into that marketplace. In terms of margins going forward, we have improved our customer pricing significantly this year. So I think it's improved by something like 10%, relative to the top three today compared to where we were in January at the start of the year. So we've improved customer pricing quite significantly, but then we've been working very hard in terms of our investment management capability and strategic asset allocation to improve the yield supporting it. So as I've said before, I do expect yields to come lower. I'm not going to give a number on where that's going to go, but I do expect yields to come to reduce over time. But the returns on capital available and the strength of the margins to be very strong. And that financial discipline in doing that is fundamental to us. I mean, I've been really quite pleasantly surprised, but also pretty pleased when I've looked at across our competitor results in the first half. And as Tim mentioned earlier, our UK new business margin was 4.9% in the first half. That's actually the highest of any of the UK margins disclosed by our competitors. If you want an example of the transformation of the business that we brought about over the last 3 years, 3 years ago our UK new business was loss-making. Here we are 3 years in with a business that now is fundamentally different to the old FP and the old AXA. Margin in the first half that's actually the highest in terms of what our UK division has achieved. Has that answered your question?
Yeah.
Andrew.
Morning, it's Andrew Green, Autonomous. Three questions. Firstly, I think you said that you'd expect operating variances to be neutral over the long term, but there's quite a chunk of development costs there. Can you give us some projection on whether you see those disappearing over time? Secondly, I think on the UK and Heritage, you said that in a runoff situation, there'll be a 25 million drop in the cash monetization each year. Can you just give us some sense, as the business you're writing this year, how much cash will that throw off next year to sort of make up that gap? And then thirdly, on cash and capital, I think 350 million of dividend comes up from the life companies to the centre to cover your 300 million cost of dividend. You've got a very strong capital position. You've got a very low risk balance sheet. You're driving a lot of cash up there. Why do we have to wait for the cash to get to 400 or the sustainable surplus to get to 400 million a year before we can see cash and capital returns? What point in time can we revisit the 250 million we're still owed?
Thank you, Andrew. I will just, I think Tim will take virtually all of those. I will just make an observation. I talked about this 176 million of sustainable free surplus before operating variances. So that's basically the expected in-force return, less investment in new business, debt cost, and development cost. So that's what I would see as the kind of the before the operating variances. It's then the operating variances are the kind of three other lines further down the table that I'm sure many of you are familiar with in our disclosures. And it's that which I've said we would expect to be at least net neutral over the medium term. So it's the 176 is those first four lines after the impact of development costs. But Tim, do you want to pick up on the rest of Andrew's questions?
Yeah, certainly. Absolute level of development costs going forward, I still think it'll remain high for a little while yet. I think that's we made those sort of comments at year end, and I would still stand by those today. In terms of the UK and Heritage, the 25 million drop. Remember that the disclosures we gave at the start of the year were not just estimated, but they were shown in annual chunks. Where actually they were rounded to the nearest 25 million in the profile that I gave. So today we told you about the 10 million coming from the annuity transfer, if we get regulatory approval to do that. There's another 5 coming from the Friends Life investment achievements that we've done. So we're now in the onesies and twosies almost, and comparing that to something that was by definition rounded to the nearest 25. So if I stand back at it, do I believe that next year we can offset from all these combination of actions, bearing in mind the expected cash flow footprint of what we expect to write in the second half? Yeah, I'd be pretty confident that we could do it. But that depends, of course, on the second half performance. And I know you're asking for the cash flow footprint of the business we've written in the first half, and I'm sorry, it's a bit like this 250 you mentioned. I'm not quite sure I remember what that's all about. But I'm not going to give at this stage a cash flow footprint on the business that we've written just in the first 6 months of the year. I'm aware others provide annual footprints, but you know, it's not something for a half year update. Needless to say, you can interpret from my words in the slide I used that we're pretty confident that we've dealt with next year's 25.
I think the final question was regarding
The upstream. I think
good try, Tim.
I'd written it down here. It's all right, you always pass everything to me. I think what that demonstrates is the efficiency of our group structure, that we can actually upstream, £350 million up to the group's holding companies per annum. But our dividend policy is clear and it's unchanged, Andrew. We will not be considering a progressive dividend until we get to 400 of sustainable generation of distributable cash.
I mean, I'll just briefly add a quick comment to that, which is my view on this is that I'm very confident that we can continue to improve our cash generation and achieve our £400 million target. I'm also confident that the strength of our new business franchises, together with the heritage initiatives, means that we can grow cash into the longer term. And ultimately, even after a significant re-rating, as we open this morning, we're still trading on a 6.5% dividend yield when a lot of our competitors are on 4-5. So I still see significant potential upside. Having a strong, robust, low-risk capital base, for me, underpins that story. And so in terms of what we're looking to offer at this stage, that's our focus, a strong, robust, low-risk capital base, improving cash generation and driving profitable growth. And ultimately, we believe that should drive further rating of the share price. Greg?
Good morning, Greg Patterson. Three questions. The first one's got his two numbers. One is, I wonder if you could just tell us what percentage of your annuity sales in the first half were enhanced. And also, just so we can get a feel of your enhanced capacity, I wonder if you could tell us how many risk criteria you're pricing on in your lifestyle annuities, so we can get a feel for how sophisticated that engine is. You also talk about uniform with-profit framework, and the implication is that's going to release some kind of capital synergies. I was just wondering, does that mean we're going to get some modelling assumption change benefits coming through in terms of releasing free surplus or embedded value? And then just your protection strategy for the second half of the year, I'm not sure I quite understand it. Are you telling us that you're going to jack up volumes in the second half because there was a big jump in the second quarter, and hence volumes will create greater economies of scale, counterbalancing the pricing that you'd have to give up in order to jump the volumes? I just trying to understand what the strategy is for protection in the next two quarters, yeah?
Okay.
In terms of pricing versus scale, et cetera.
I'll take the annuity-related bits of that, and Tim, if you take the protection and the with-profit restructuring. So in terms of the annuity side, we haven't disclosed a specific split of the proportion that's in enhanced annuities. What I can say, though, is if you kind of look at the market statistics, then the volume of internal vesting enhanced annuities we're doing is one of the leaders in the market in terms of the volume we're doing there. In terms of the approach to rating factors, obviously smoking is, we're very much focused on lifestyle there. So we're developing, what I think could well be quite valuable IP in terms of looking at lifestyle as a means of rating annuities. Smoking is one of the key factors, but there's a whole host of other factors that we look at. And I mentioned before, we take quite a considered approach to this. As we've piloted this through, we've then gone through a process of actually physically sending a nurse to every customer that we've taken through our process to validate areas where you get not non-disclosure and otherwise. It's actually quite fascinating because every male on average overestimates their height, which actually gives them a poorer deal on annuities, and every woman invariably underestimates their weight, which gives them a poorer deal on annuities. So it's actually quite interesting how the selective effects work. But so that's the approach we're taking in terms of the annuity side, and really getting ourselves confident that what we're doing will stand the test of time, and that we'll deliver the value we're seeking to deliver.
But, just the question is it in hundreds or dozens, or I mean the criteria you're looking
So I would say, you know, there are a dozen particularly relevant factors in what we're looking at, some more important than others. And obviously, we're looking at other rating factors and developing our thinking on other rating factors beyond that. But I wouldn't suggest that the model is trying to do 100 plus rating factors. It's not that there aren't that many different lifestyle effects that you need to look at. Tim, do you want to take the other elements?
Yeah, well, being a short fat alcoholic, I'm looking forward to a good annuity, it sounds. Back to more pressing matters. We currently got, I think, 7 different with-profit funds, all with different strategies, all with different hedging approaches. There is clearly some efficiencies we can get from having a common and consistent risk mitigation framework and other aspects across all those funds. If that gives us some modelling benefits, then terrific. Don't forget, some of those may just come through in actually helping us manage our Pillar 2 position, not just our Pillar 1. So there is an opportunity for us to create something that is more consistent and more efficient. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to see huge increases in free surplus. Witness the fact that just the rationalisation of life companies, we very much took the low-hanging fruit in bringing the number of life companies down to 4. By moving from 4 to 2, what we're gaining are some internal operational efficiencies, which really don't mean much to shareholders, but they make the place easier to run, and the benefits we all get will at least cover the cost of doing that. So that's clearly worth doing. As far as protection is concerned, we saw a big step up in the volumes in Q2, but that was largely, and others have reported this as well, it's not unique to us, because a fair degree of volumes in Q1 were actually sucked into Q4 to deal with the changes before the change in the tax regime and other regulatory changes that were coming on, affecting the protection market and gender-neutral pricing, for example. So we're pleased to see the momentum building back through the second quarter, taking us with a strong position into Q3. I can promise you, Greg, we have absolutely no intention of slashing the prices and going for volume. I think stepping back from volume and taking value, I haven't seen anyone else this season report growth in corporate benefits or even growth in protection profits, despite the dents in the volumes. So you will see us continue to operate the financial discipline that you'd expect to see from us. And that's why I'm being quite transparent today and saying, will we hit the very challenging targets for that business segment? I don't know. I expect to be in the ballpark, is my expression in the prepared words. And I'm not going to go lowering the standards of seeking proper returns on our invested capital just to show you guys a green in March. I think it's a very respectable performance and a turnaround from a loss-making business 2 years ago to one that's giving us 15% IRR in the first half. And I want it higher, just like you do. But I'm perfectly comfortable with the way it's performing right now.
Go on.
Morning. Marcus Barnard from Oriel Securities. Given the name Resolution is often associated with the consolidation of closed life funds and certain individual characters, which is probably not the way the group is now going forward, is that a name you're happy to keep on the group going forward, or is that something you're likely to review?
It's something we've given thought to, but I'm determined that as a group we are absolutely consistent period to period in terms of our messaging and our execution and delivery. Given we set out a whole series of targets under the Resolution brand for delivery in 2013, I didn't think it appropriate to consider changing the name associated with delivering those targets in 2013. It's something we may well give consideration to in due course, but not just now.
Thank you very much. Andy Hughes, Exxon BNP Paribas. I just wanted to touch on slide 10, where I think you talk about the corporate pensions costs. So the cost number you're showing, I appreciate it's fully loaded, is about 60 basis points for the corporate pensions business. So I'm just wondering, how fixed is this cost base? Because obviously, new corporate pension schemes in the post-RDR world won't be at 60 basis points. So could you give us an idea about how much variable versus cost versus overheads are here and how much you can address the overheads that are attached into the business? Thank you.
John, do you want to pick that one up? He's looking a little bit upset in the front here, so I'll give him a chance to go.
That was as a result of the sporting insult to Andy, not. But yeah, in terms of corporate pensions, its relatively fixed cost base. And I think, as you can hear with this terrible Australian accent, one of the things I look forward to adding some value to is that when I see the success, I see the corporate pensions market in the UK as being relatively immature compared to some of the more mature corporate pensions market. You can see we're accounting for this business and managing this business on a cash basis. And as that assets under management back book grows, I think you'll see the margins continue to improve over time because it is relatively fixed cost as a business.
Thanks, John. Alan.
Hello, Alan Devlin from Barclays. Just following up, actually, in corporate benefits, can you talk about how should we look at the business in the second half and going into next year, given the the strong pipeline you have and the staging coming on board and the pipeline three times bigger than it was this time last year, plus the fact that business is now cash positive, the cash profile is positive. You know, how important will this business be over the next 18 months in driving your cash generation higher?
Sure. Okay, so taking the first part of that first, obviously with a pipeline of new scheme mandates three times what it was this time last year, together with actually the 40 schemes we've staged in the first half, we haven't had much of that revenue through yet. It'll come in the second half, 150 more schemes to still auto-enrol. Clearly, we're feeling pretty optimistic about the future, and I'm particularly pleased with the discipline we've shown in corporate benefits. So, to have new business profits up 30% year on year, is seems to me, from what I've seen, unique in the market. And that discipline, I think, is important. If I then look into the medium term, the fact that corporate benefits is now cash positive on a fully loaded cost basis, and it's a capital-light business, means that it is now adding value. I'm getting money back from that business, having not invested much capital in it. And obviously, with the strong growth in trajectory of assets under management and a relatively fixed cost base and maintaining financial discipline, in particular, I think it's got the opportunity to give us decent incremental growth in cash each year, which will be another driver of getting ourselves up to 400 million cash per annum and beyond. So I think it's got an important role to play in that regard. The only caveat I'd put on that is I still do see behaviour in the marketplace where new business has been written at on terms which I don't believe we could write it on those terms profitably. And so if, we will only we'll be very selective about where we play, and we'll only do so where we can do so profitably. And that's the only caveat I would put around it. But I think as long as we do a very strong job by our existing clients and give them good service, now we're out of the RDR commission phase, which did have an impact on outflows across the market as a whole. Now we're out of that. I am confident that we'll do a good job by our existing clients, retain them, and clearly a lot of our future fund flows will come from those existing clients.
Just to follow up on the corporate benefits, what are you seeing in the competitive environment, given the supply-demand imbalance, particularly next year when there's lots of companies coming on board? Is it still aggressive, or is pricing getting a bit more rational?
A lot more rational, and hence the pipeline's three times the size. So if the pricing wasn't rational, I wouldn't be winning the business, and I wouldn't have a pipeline three times the size. So it's definitely it has been more rational over the last quarter or so, which is great, but we remain disciplined in our approach and philosophy. Ben.
Hi, it's Ben Cohen at Canaccord Genuity. Could I just ask, on the strategy with regards to acquiring back books, could you say more about the size of deals that you may look at? And given that Swiss Re and Phoenix are in talks, should we take it that a deal of that size is not something that in the medium term you would be interested in, as clearly you've obviously got your strategy that you're playing out, you've got your targets to hit, but these things don't necessarily come along in the order that you might like to see them in. Thank you.
So, I mean, I'll just reiterate what I've said, that we are not seeking acquisitions at this stage at the present time. In the medium term, we do see potential value from further consolidation because having a separate, it's unique for a company open to new business to have a separate dedicated heritage division with its own statutory entity, and hence its own P&L, its own commercial management team. And that team have got another couple of years worth of significant value we believe we have the potential to realise within heritage. So not seeking acquisitions at this stage. Obviously, as we start to think into that medium term, we'll then think about the different potential opportunities of creating value. And we'll be pretty broad in our thinking around that. So it doesn't necessarily need to be acquisitions. You can look at reassurance type arrangements. You can look at a whole host of different ways of deploying our skills and capabilities. We'll be quite broad in our thinking when we get to that. But it's not now. Right now, we're not seeking acquisitions. Any final questions? Andy again.
Hi, Andy Hughes, Exxon BP Paribas. So, as I understand it, the annuity deal allows you to distribute more of the estate to policyholders. Is that right? Is that the idea? And does that mean that we'll get higher terminal bonuses flowing through, i.e. higher shareholder transfers from with-profit funds? Thank you.
Now, we've done two things on annuities. We have originally the with-profit fund was writing the annuities for the maturing pension policies within the with-profit fund. And the with-profit fund doesn't want to write annuities because basically they're longer tail than the outstanding with-profit policies. So we've transferred that across and we now write that in our retirement income business in the shareholder fund. So that's the first thing we've done. And the second thing we've done is the stock of existing annuities in the with-profit funds, which totals $4.5 billion altogether, We've agreed, subject to regulatory approval, to transfer $2 billion of that across again into the shareholder fund, where the shareholder will get this $10 million per annum of benefit. So I don't think, unless Jonathan waves at me to the contrary, that we should expect any impact on terminal bonuses or anything else out of any of that. Yeah, no material impact. So. Any final questions? Okay, well, it's been a long old results season. So I think we're probably the last of the major players to report. So I will leave you to go on your way. And thank you very much for coming and joining us this morning. Thank you.